going to cover several verses this morning. So we'll chant together text 40. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sasharasanam Udyamatyamya. Rigmrigayur Vanagocharaha. Hantya Sadur Magand Dinan. Vino Savyati Arau Janaha. Sasharasanam Udyama. Udyamya Mrigayur Vanagocharaha. Hantya Sadur Magand Dinan. Veno Savyati Arau Janaha. Saha. That boy of the name Vena. Sasharasanam. His bow. Udyamya. Taking up. Mriga Yohu, the hunter. Vana Gocharaha, going into the forest. Hanti, used to kill. Asaduhu, being very cruel. Mrigan, deer. Dinan, poor. Venaha, Vena. Asau, there he is. Iti, thus. Araut, would cry. Janaha, all the people. Translation, after fixing his bow and arrow, the cruel boy used to go to the forest and unnecessarily kill innocent deer. And as soon as he came, all the people would cry, "Here comes cruel Vena, here comes cruel Vena." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kshatriyas are allowed to hunt in the forest for the purpose of learning the killing art, not to kill animals for eating or for any other purpose. Here comes a heavy sentence. The Kshatriya kings were sometimes expected to cut off the head of a culprit in the state. Anybody will volunteer for being a Kshatriya? For this reason, the Kshatriyas were allowed to hunt in the forest, because this son of King Anga, or Vena, was born of a bad mother. He was very cruel, and he used to go to the forest and unnecessarily kill the animals. All the neighboring inhabitants would be frightened by his presence, and they would call, "Here comes Vena, here comes cruel Vena." That's how it's in a verse. So from the beginning of his life, he was fearful to the citizens. I'm going to read several other verses. Text 41. This is the inventory of the kind of cruelty of this boy. Text 41. The boy was so cruel that while playing with the young boys of his age, he would kill them very mercilessly, as if they were animals meant for slaughter. We sometimes have discipline problem with children's, but not quite like this. Text 42, after seeing the cruel and merciless behavior of his son, Vena, King Anga punished him in different ways to reform him, but was unable to bring him to the path of gentleness. He thus became greatly aggrieved. The king thought to himself, persons who have no son are certainly fortunate. They must have worshiped the Lord in their previous lives so that they would not have to suffer the unbearable happiness caused by a bad son. He continues, a sinful son causes a person's reputation to vanish. His irreligious activities at home cause irreligion and quarrel amongst everyone and create only endless anxiety. Purport, it is said that a married couple must have a son, otherwise their family life is void. But a son born without good qualities is as good as a blind eye. A blind eye has no use for seeing, but it is simply unbearably painful. The king therefore thought himself very unfortunate to have such a bad son. Text 45. Who, if he is considerate and intelligent, would desire such a worthless son? Such a son is nothing but a bond of illusion for the living entity, and he makes one's home miserable. Then he started going the other direction. Then the king thought, a bad son is better than a good son, because a good son creates an attachment for home, whereas a bad son does not. A bad son creates a hellish home for which an intelligent man naturally becomes very easily detached. Purport. This is text 46, so the next one is 47 for tomorrow. The king began to think in terms of attachment and detachment from one's material home. According to Prahlad Maharaj, the material home is compared to a blind well. If a man falls down into a blind well, it is very difficult to get out of it and begin life again. Prahlad Maharaj has advised that one give up this blind well of home life as soon as possible and go to the forest to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Vedic civilization, this giving up of home by vanaprastha or sannyas is compulsory. But people are so attached to their homes that even up to the point of death, they do not like to retire from home life. King Anga, therefore, thinking in terms of detachment, accepted his bad son as a good impetus for detachment from home life. He therefore considered his bad son his friend, since he was helping him become detached from his home. Ultimately, one has to learn how to detach oneself from attachment to material life. Therefore, if a bad son, by his bad behavior, helps a householder to go away from home, it is a boon. We're hearing two very different versions from King Anga. Vena wasn't just a bad son, he was wicked and cruel and you know, imagine kids go to play, it's school time, they go to play in recess, and one of the kids is, you know, his sporting is killing other kids. And he's the son of the king. So the king did his best to correct his son, but his son was incorrigible. This verse and purport in text 40 are describing Hantyasadur Mrigan Dinan, the third line on the board here. Asadu is translated as being cruel. So I guess we can say the opposite, that sadhu means the opposite of being cruel, whatever, being compassionate. A cruel person doesn't consider what's pleasant or unpleasant for the other individual. And a sadhu is compassionate. They consider another person is suffering. There's a nice lesson from Narada's instruction or Narada's contemplation on the situation with Nalakuvera and Manigriva, and his contemplation is it's very logical sequence. Opulence without a pure heart creates pride. Pride in the heart creates an insensitivity to the feelings of others. Pride makes one insensitive. And that insensitivity can be up to just thoughtlessly, even deliberately, inflicting pain and suffering on others and being completely insensitized to it, like deriving some satisfaction from it, in fact, without any consideration of the impact upon the other person, the other being. Specifically, he speaks of animals killing, animal slaughter, for one's own purposes. It tastes, I like the taste, and so I kill, because I like to eat that which tastes good, without any consideration of the other being. So, here's Vena, having this asadu-like character, and so, Hanti Mrigan, he goes to the forest for killing of animals. Specifically, the Mrigan is translated as deer, but more broadly, Mrigan means animals. Deer are very innocent. It's not like, you know, a wild boar or an elephant or some other animal that might like threaten the safety and life. And so they're a lion, some dangerous, wild, ferocious animal. On the other end of the spectrum is something, I mean, deer eat a lot. It's a problem for people who are agriculturalists when deer start getting into their crops and eating everything. But it's, you know, that's different than, you know, one that has claws and teeth and kills. And so innocent animals, is how Prabhupada is presenting this. So the authorization for kings to go to the forest and hunt is to test or improve their skill in fighting, because it's their of their necessity. So when there isn't a war going on or an intense battle, how do they keep that skill, hone that skill, and strengthen that skill? They are authorized by Vedic culture to go into the forest and engage in killing of animals. So one of the practices was they would have a spear or a dagger, and their job was to come back with a dead lion. So, you know, you're walking along a path and you've got a spear or a dagger, and your job is to, you know, face the lion and not be killed by the lion, and kill the lion and bring back the lion dead. That's an interesting practice, very different than taking a gun or a bow and arrow and going finding deer and shooting deer. Very different. Very, very different. And if one does not have the job description, the duty of a kshatriya is very difficult, because on the one hand, but then on the other hand, on the one hand, they have to be very chivalrous and be ready to take on any dangerous opponent and not flinch, not, in fact, like it, up to the point of Prabhupada specifically mentioning decapitation sometimes necessary. And on the other hand, to never deploy that skill, that strength, that power for anything other than religious purpose. Very special qualification. Be gentle and be fierce as circumstance requires. How is that possible? It's not born of the modes of nature. It's arising out of their devotion to the personality of Godhead, being completely submissive to the personality of Godhead. And unless there's a higher purpose, that tendency remains checked. But so it is with any religious activity, whether it's in family life producing children, or if it's a brahmana who has the capacity for great intellectual activity. The brahmana only engages in those things when it's directly in the line of some service to the Supreme Lord, and otherwise they don't engage in it. They just don't engage in it. Like, for example, Rupa Goswami's meeting the Digvijay Pandit that came to Vrindavan, and he wanted to debate the greatest scholar, as he found out the greatest scholar is Rupa Goswami. He came to Rupa Goswami, who said, "Oh, my dear Digvijay Pandit, you're so qualified. I would never be able to enter into a debate with you and be successful, so I'll just sign the document that says you defeated me." Having no interest to engage in those kinds of activities. But there are those that have that spirit, that's like their thing. They have intellect, they go bashing people. When we were in South India, we heard the position of the court pundit of the king of the Chola dynasty, whose name was Kola Hola, And that was his thing. He was like super bright. And the king became so dependent upon him or so much appreciative of him that Kolahola had a deal with the king. Normally, a brahmana is maintained by the king. And the king extracts taxes, and the king maintains the brahmanas by charity. But Kolahola was such like a proud person that he got permission from the king that any brahmana who he challenged in the whole of the king's kingdom and he defeated them in debate, Kolahola could extract an annual tax from the brahmanas. Brahmanas are not to be taxed. We like turn Vedic culture upside down because he was such a person, proud. So, strength that's gained from religious activity and the performance of religious duty, it's to be used in a proper way and otherwise not used at all. And if there isn't the capacity of sense control and due discrimination of when should something be used and when should something not be used in service to the Lord, that person's is a problem. He's disruption to society. Whatever the thing is that one has that has some power, some strength, some effect. Without that moderating factor of character, then you have Kali Yuga. People that are irreligious and somebody's strong over here and they're exploiting somebody that's weak over there in so many different fields of activity. So Jumunacharya, a small boy, accepted the challenge of Kolahola. Because his teacher, Vasyacharya, was not in the ashram at the time the tax collectors on behalf of Kolahola came, insulting Vasyacharya and swaggering with their Kolahola teacher, who's like Mr. Dude, big guy. And Jumunacharya said, Kolahola is nothing but a big fool. Because anybody who trains their students to have the qualities that you have, he's nothing but a fool. I'll challenge him to a debate. You tell Kolahola, accept my debate or pay me a tax. So they went back to Kolahola. And in front of the king, they said, Bhasyacharya's student, just small boy, he won't pay the tax, and he's challenged you to a debate. And Kolahola just laughed and turned to the king and said, surely I'll accept a challenge for a debate. This is a new one. I'm always challenging other people to debate. So the messengers went back and told Jumunacharya, Kolahola has accepted your debate. You can please come and see him at an appropriate time. And Jumunacharya said, if this is going to be a royal debate, you tell the king he should sell a royal palanquin and carry me in a covered royal palanquin to debate with Kolahola. Tell him. So the messengers came back and told him. Said, oh, we'll send a royal palanquin. Anyway, there's more to the story. But here's a young Kshatriya boy who, according to Kshatriya capacity or duty, can utilize and practice his strength in fighting for the purpose later on of following religious principles and giving protection to innocent people according to principles of Dharma. But this little boy doesn't have principles of Dharma controlling him. He's out of control. Go to the forest and wantonly kill. Which means that later on when he grows up, he'll use his strength to wantonly kill whoever, whatever. And the king recognized. So he used various disciplines and engaged other disciplinarians, and his son was incorrigible. So what do you do with an incorrigible son? The example that's given in the purport is a blind eye. It doesn't do anything, it just causes severe pain. What do you do? The eye has a purpose, but if it's not functioning, it's doing not functioning, it's just causing pain. What do you do? So he was feeling great grief. I'm the king. He's the firstborn son according to the laws that govern kings. He's the next king, and he's incorrigible. So he was praising those that have no son. They must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead in their previous life because they didn't get any son. How fortunate they were. Because a bad son causes misery in life. It brings irreligion in the family and it brings irreligion outside the family. Everything becomes destroyed by that bad quality son. So lamenting, grieving. As we sometimes do when things don't go the way that, you know, we make a plan. Because he made a plan. He had no children. By special yajna and special means, he was able to have children. So he had children. And lo and behold, not a good child. But he brought it about by special arrangements. Then he's going in a different direction, the direction of detachment, realizing, what a godsend. Now I'm being detached from the blind well of household life. Misery can be an opportunity. And it's not simply because, oh, I'm having a problem in household life, so you just give it a bad name and leave household life. That's not the justification here. Having a son like Vena is one thing. Having a problem is another thing. But the whole of the material world, not just sons like Vena, but the whole of the material world is a lesson. And that is trying to be enjoyer of a place that's designed for suffering is a fool's paradise. And so many persons are doing exactly that. They're going into the desert, that is a place where there's no water, to find water, to quench their thirst. Coming into the waves, this phrase was there with Kurma Brahman, waves of misery in material existence. Not just a wave, but wave after wave after wave after wave. There's a lesson. And some people just like make it their business to get out their surfboard and ride the waves. But the lesson is it's not it's not a fit place for us to be. We don't belong here. We don't belong in a position of trying to be the enjoyer of Prakriti. And it's because fundamentally it's Krishna's property. And if we act as thieves in trying to be the proprietor and the enjoyer of Krishna's energy, if we act as imitation Purushas, then we suffer. But that's dukkhalam ashashvatam. That's the place by design. Yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. It's the design of the place. So we can thank Maya for bringing so much pain, misery, and suffering for the sake of detachment. Or if there's an instrument of our suffering, we can thank that instrument of our suffering. You're my dearmost friend. You're helping me to become detached. As if we're God conscious and understanding that the purpose of life is to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So someone who helps us take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's a friend. Oh, my dear friend, thank you very much. In life, in our day-to-day devotional life, it's not sometimes, there's a constant flow of circumstances that are difficult. It's not unique to any one of us. It's not like I get more of them than you do, or you get more of them than I do. We have our variety of this difficulty and that difficulty, and each of us get ours. And as we establish relationships with other devotees, we come to understand what their obstacles, difficulties, circumstances are that they're addressing and dealing with. How we address those things is the measure of our Krishna consciousness. The description in the Bhagavatam, there's a description of a group of sages that had gathered together. Narada joined that group of sages and saw that they were engaged in yajna, some were engaged in tapasya. They were engaged in different varieties of elevating activity. But he asked them, you're all doing different things for elevation. Can you tell me who's the object, who's the goal of these is to reach the Supreme? Who's the Supreme? Some said, Lord Shiva is the Supreme. Some said Lord Vishnu is supreme. Some said Lord Brahma is the supreme. They had disagreement. So Narada proposed, why not we'll get the best effect if we can engage our various efforts all towards the same. Yes, that's how do we achieve that? So discussion, and the proposal was made, if we examine each of those three personalities and see how they respond to a difficult circumstance, we can then understand who is supreme. Because one's greatness can be measured by how one responds to difficult circumstances when they come your way. So they all agreed, it's true. That's a measure of someone's greatness. So they had the proposal, let's send some difficulty to Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Vishnu and see how they respond. And that way we'll have an understanding of who is the greatest. So they all agreed on that procedure. And then they had someone who was going to go deliver some difficulty, some insult specifically to Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and no one was ready to volunteer. They drafted Bhrigu. He didn't want to go either. Oh, you're the qualified one. So he went, and first mental offense, verbal offense, and then corporeal offense. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu was accepted as supreme by Narada and by the whole group because of his, how he responded to a difficulty that came his way. Specifically being kicked in the chest. Lord Vishnu being kicked in the chest by Bhrigu, a Brahmin. Krishna loves Brahmanas. Here comes a Brahmin and kicks him in the chest. Huh? We don't imitate. We don't go to the deity and say, you know, let me worship you. It's a lila of the Lord to disclose the greatness of the Lord. And for our position, spiritually, to become qualified, one, there must be detachment from worldly circumstances. There's a very nice description of this in the message of Vidura to Dhritarashtra. In the 13th chapter of Canto 1, he's advising Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra, stop being so attached. Your attachment is ridiculous. You had the desire to be king because you were the firstborn son, but you were blind, so you couldn't be king, so your sons would become king. And because of that attachment, you did so many abominable things, knowingly, to your dear relatives. They're the rightful heirs of the throne. So many times I described this to you, and now what do you have? You have nothing. All of your 100 sons are gone, killed in a battle, because you continue to support them. You could have changed the course. You're the king. And now you're being maintained by those same persons that killed your 100 sons. You're shameless. And on top of it all, you're still thinking, I'm the king. You're a fool. You should become detached. My dear brother, give up this attachment. And the purport Prabhupada mentions there are three categories or stages of detachment. One is dira, one who can be separated from family and the objects of attachment and remain undisturbed. Another is sannyas, specifically an impersonalist sannyas, where born of frustration with circumstances one renounces. And a third is Narottama or Paramahansa, a Vaishnava devotee of the Lord who becomes so attached to the Supreme Lord. On the strength of that attachment to the Supreme Lord, they're detached. And Vidura understood that Dhritarashtra is not capable of that third one. He's not there. It's not for him. But minimally, give up. Dira, detach yourself from this worldly circumstance, which is just a source of misery. An embarrassment. And if you die in this condition, attached as you are, what's your destiny? and all the sinful activities that you've been engaged in. What's your destiny? Give up this attachment. Leave home. So, similarly, Anga is contemplating that his son is like Vidura, who's delivering the message, detach yourself. Renounce this entanglement. Because he brought the entanglement upon himself. One last thing, and that is the message is not, there are two things. The message is not that anyone who enters the Grihastha ashram is fool number one. And the best program is get out of it as soon as possible. That's not what the message is. Because obviously there's a Vedic system for gradually developing attachment to the Supreme Lord through the process of taking on the responsibilities of household life. It's as old as the creation is, and it's, if taken up in the proper way, it's effective. On the other hand, it can be said, it's said by some, I won't mention the names of who's saying this, but it's mentioned by some that in our present day ISKCON, there's not the same degree of renunciation or emphasis upon renunciation and detachment that Srila Prabhupada gave in the early stages of our Hare Krishna movement about the importance of detachment and renunciation. There's a counter reply to that, and that was that Srila Prabhupada had, it was like an emergency situation. He was very elderly and he had the vision of creating a worldwide Hare Krishna movement and a short time to do it in. And so he did things like, I remember when I was a new devotee, fresh out of college, and there was another devotee named Rishi Kumar that Prabhupada gave sannyas, and he was just either 19 or 20 years old. He didn't last very long as a sannyasi. But he was like, you know, Prabhupada wanted devotees to take up that leading position. Then another, when I was still in college, without the names, there was a devotee who was at the same part of that college program where I was, becoming, you know, involved in Krishna consciousness. And I'll mention the name, Janame Jaya Prabhu. And his wife was Taradasi, and she left. She blooped. And so Prabhupada was considering, with Janame Jaya, would you like to take sannyas? Or some persons were putting, whoever, wherever the energy was coming from, there was talk about his taking sannyas. His wife came back to the Hare Krishna movement and they lived as householders and had three children and so on, and he did a lot of valuable service as a householder, helping to spread Krishna consciousness in the place where he went. It was in Atlanta. In the pioneering days of Prabhupada's movement, there was like an urgency for preaching, and renounced devotees, Prabhupada was anticipating they would have that effectiveness. But he also found that householders were extremely effective, like the whole unique phenomena in the UK. Three householder couples did what two of Bhaktisiddhanta's topmost sannyasis couldn't accomplish from that position as householders. So whether this ashram or that ashram, the spirit of detachment from worldly comforts, pleasures, etc., 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 finding happiness in those things. And whether this ashram, that ashram, take up the mission of attaching ourselves to Krishna and bringing the message of Krishna into the lives of others in a very effective way. That kind of detachment is required. We're going to be discussing this topic. One devotee is being asked to lead a discussion on this topic when we go to our meetings in Dallas. And we'll see where that discussion goes. There's certainly nivritti marg, the path of decreasing one's material involvement as one progresses in spiritual life. It's not ashram specific, it's consciousness specific, how to gradually increase our attachment for the Supreme and thereby decrease our sense of hoping for happiness with material things, whatever those material things might be for somebody. Commonly it's wealth or it's male-female indulgences. But the principle is enhancing spiritual awakening and with that detachment. So the king Anga is taking it that his son Vena is providing that very nice impetus of detachment. Okay, so any comments or questions? Yes. We're going back to Dutendriya because he's sitting in the back row and he put a hand up real fast.
I was just thinking of Chanaka Pandit when he said, a snake bites once, but a foolish son is a constant disturbance.
A snake bite? Bites, foolish son?
A snake bites once, but a foolish son is a constant disturbance.
Uh-huh.
And then we heard the expression, might is right.
I've heard
which
that.
Which is like the mantra of Kali Yuga, I guess. One of the mantras. So, and our very existence is in a place of non-existence. Only the strong survive, but nobody's fit to survive. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Jai Jagannath.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. And Maharaj Anga's situation for a person who will be reading this, it could appear that Anga's impetus for leaving is aversion and not detachment. And there seems to be a distinction between the two, because if one leaves because he's averse, then he may find himself in the same situation in the future because there's still attachment there. Whereas if one is genuinely detached, then he won't again pursue the thing. So how does one recognize the difference between genuine detachment and just
the one big difference, particularly with Anga, is he's got conscious. And the aversion category that's mentioned in first canto Bhagavatam, it doesn't explicitly say it, but since number three is with attachment to the Supreme, the other is detachment just out of frustration. So it seems like Anga has a combination. He's frustrated, but he's also looking to the Supreme as you've sent this impetus for my detachment. So it's a combination of the two, something like that. The big factor here is is the individual thinking of shelter in the Supreme Lord? So in his case, it's something of a mix. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, welcome home. My question is...
Welcome to the snowstorm. I was in South India where it was like 80 degrees and sunny. Welcome to the snowstorm.
Yeah. Okay, my question is, after a householder has went through so much anxiety and stress in householder life, how does one know when he's detached from household life? And, you know, what are the signs, and when does he know to, you know, maybe he need a change, you know?
One standard is, it's the standard that Prabhupada regularly spoke about, including in this section he speaks about, at 50 years of age, everyone should accept vanaprastha stage. Vanaprastha doesn't mean one leaves one's wife, it means one leaves that the softness and comforts of home and the indulgences in children, grandchildren, and all of that stuff. So when one's worldly duty has been completed, move on. And that there's traditional ways in which that is to be done, but it's a response to your question is, how does one know when this is the right time? It's, you know, age is one indicator. And that means when the responsibilities of the dependents are now, they're able to maintain themselves independently. That's one indication to the age or the time factor. Another is, for a devotee, a measure is the satisfaction that one finds in devotional activity, principally hearing and chanting. And on the flip side of that is like a paling or a loss of interest in, a loss of anticipation of finding happiness in the worldly things that previously made up my life, where I would look forward to, you know, whatever it is. For somebody it's music, and some other people it's money, and some other people it's power, and whatever it is. You know, finding no satisfaction, no attraction to even go there, and great attraction to go to the other. That's a good sign. Another, like, it's a little more radical, but it's, Prabhupada speaks about it. It's not like in the banner headlines in his teachings, but it's there strongly within his teachings, that when the situation is simply incompatible for spiritual progress, it's just simply incompatible for spiritual progress, that's an indicator. One has to be thoughtful about how one is applying oneself to the household situation. Am I effectively applying myself in such a way it can bring about, I'm just not applying myself in the proper way, you know, elevation of the family members and spiritual life, and so on. But when it's just an incompatible situation, then one can leave the situation. It's described. Probably, in all three of those, it's worth commenting. Those are guidelines that you can look internally, but it's good to have someone guiding you to help you externally understand, you know, have I evaluated these different criterion properly, and what step would you advise for me? given the circumstance. Okay? Hare Krishna.
Thank you. I was trying to understand more how to become sensitive when you're dealing with others and you need to convey a message or just have a conversation with someone about something that needs to get done or something that didn't get done properly, and how to have the balance between or how to be careful to be sensitive and not like carry the person, like you're completely worried about how they're going to process something and then it's like difficult how to convey yourself.
A few things come to mind hearing your question. One of them is, what are the rules of communication? Like a rule of communication. First seek to understand, then seek to be understood. Second is, if there's something that needs to be communicated because something needs to get done or something like that, look inside and see where that voice that something needs to get done is coming from. Is it coming from Ishwara Bhav, or is it coming from a mood of service? Something needs to get done. We're commonly serving the same Lord, the same Master, the same person to who we're trying to please. Because if that's the mood, then it's one kind of communication. If it's another kind of mood, it's another kind of communication. And perhaps even the thing may get done, but it'll create tension within the relationship between you and the other person. So be clear in your own heart, at least, that the purpose of the communication is to serve the one that we're trying to please nicely. That immediately enhances the sensitivity factor. And the other enhances the insensitivity factor. The Ishwara, I gotta get this done. Spirit. Another general rule that enhances sensitivity is when the circumstance you're framing is something needs to get done or some communication needs to be passed on to another, the golden rule. If you were the other, how would you want somebody to communicate that to you? And then considering that increases sensitivity. Turn the table around, you're on the receiving end of the communication, how would that best be communicated if it was you? Okay. Yeah. What, heads up on what?
What to expect this weekend? I mean, you know, the
chaos, pretty much.
Chain of events.
Oh. Chain of events. Sure. There's a schedule, no? Have you seen the schedule? Would you like to see the schedule? How about... Oh, I have no idea. I'm not coordinating that. How many people? About 6 million. About 250 people, besides our normal people. It's chaos, right? Kitchen chaos, ashram chaos, to get up early, get your showers done so there's still some hot water kind of chaos. You know. Children running around, ripping the place apart, chaos. you know, chaos. And Nityananda Prabhu says he has a scheduled chaos.
This is our first time for this.
Yeah.
Pageant.
Pageant, yeah.
Pageantry, or, you know.
Yeah, okay. Event. Yeah.
Okay. It ought to be interesting, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Different. When we have, in the summer, in July, we'll have the Festival of the Holy Name. That the attendance is increasing. And it'll be, you know, another kind of scene like that. Just, you know, the activity that's taking place within will be different. But, you know, the schedule, we follow the schedule and take prasadam together. And kids running around tearing the place up. And, you know, that's the same kind of thing.
Talking to Murari about some people that might be staying at the motels or hotels, and there's one over here, but Murari was telling me it's kind of a flea bag, and hopefully we can find some good accommodations for these people, or
yeah,
hotel motels.
I'm not even like I'm just jet lagging, you know. I'm leaving all of that to other people to figure out where. You want to take the microphone? There. Anyone else? Okay. Murari? You just commented.
Okay.
Okay. Today's a very special day. You know what's very special about today? It's Kirti Das' birthday. So I don't know if there was a plan to have a surprise birthday party or something. If so, I just blew it. But it's Kirti Das' birthday, so you can all congratulate her. Happy birthday. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.